Welcome to Business Frontiers in Malta, the program exploring the dynamic world of enterprise, innovation, and economic transformation. This series shines a light on startups and entrepreneurship, powerful forces reshaping how we live, work, and do business in Malta and beyond. From bold ideas to disruptive technologies, entrepreneurs are challenging the status quo and driving global change. We will explore what fuels their journey, how they scale, and the obstacles they face in today's competitive markets. Whether you are a founder, policymaker, investor, or just curious about the frontier of modern business, this series is for you. I am your host, Professor Anne-Marie Take, from the Department of Policy, Politics and Governance, and we are broadcasting from the university's radio station, Campus 103.7. On today's program, we'll be talking with our special guest, Dr. Ian Gauci, Managing Partner, GTG Legal, diving into the topic, how GTG Legal support businesses and startups to grow, innovate, and succeed. Dr. Ian Gauci is the Managing Partner at GTG and a technology and commercial lawyer with over 25 years of experience in advising governments, authorities, and private clients in the evolving technology and cybersecurity landscape. In addition to the legal practice, Dr. Gauci actively contributes to the sector as an academic, director, author, lecturer, and international speaker. This allows him to bring both depth and perspective to the intersection of law, innovation, and digital transformation. Dr. Gauci is also contributing to the Malta Fiscal Advisory Council, Strategy for Financial Services, where he chairs the Artificial Intelligence in FinTech Working Group. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Ian, in 2021, you were recognized as Malta's best IT and internet lawyer. What does this title mean in practice? And how does it influence the way you advise startups and tech businesses today?
GTG started tapping into the technology sphere quite early, actually very, very early. We've been involved in financial service, information society, gaming, gambling, electronic comic, telcos. That's quite unique for a legal outfit, very unique actually. So our pedigree, our portfolio, our heart and soul was always in tech. So I think that award in 2002 was a culmination of our initial achievements. But we've been there, we've done it, something which a lot of law firms before used to say that there's no business case for that. I mean, for us, it was our bread and butter, and it still is.
How did yourself get into this IT technology?
I always loved the tech side. I can't say more than the legal, because when I loved the tech side, I did not know enough about the legal, even though I was intrigued. But during my university years, I used to work as well with Melita as a technology company. I was always curious on technology. Then my first role was with the Malta Communications Authority, even before I graduated. And from there onwards, so telecoms, policy, regulation, I was exposed to a lot of development, and I was exposed a lot to a lot of nascent industry rather than development, because the regulatory front, directly or indirectly, touches, is regulating the industry. From there onwards, then, joined the industry. From telecoms, I moved to information society, online gambling, then advising government, advising the authority. As a matter of fact, my partner, specifically with the Malta Lotteries and Gaming Authority, because he was the previous CEO, now he's working with me. 2012-2013. So I used to teach university as well. I started venturing into AI and DLT, appointed in the National Blockchain Task Force. We've crafted the first policy on regulating crypto. I think Malta was one of the first countries worldwide to regulate that and innovative technology, including DLT. From there onwards, I mean, I think 90-95% of my work is predominantly tech focused.
Okay, you've mentioned a lot of things, so let's try and unpack them one by one. Would you say your heart is in policy, in information society, or in law?
I would say that my body is heavily entrenched in the technological sector. and you will find heart, I would say, is policy focused, which is very important. And now at 50, it's not only implementing policy, understanding policy, making sure that policy is to a certain extent proportionate, because that reflects as well any regulation, any legal framework that which you do. So the heart is, I would say, policy oriented. My soul is tech, 100% tech for sure. I think the lungs there are legal, because you need to have a legal brain as well, but you need to fit that legal brain within the right context. And I believe, I think you acquire this as well through experience, and you acquire this through meeting different people from different walks of life, different as well entities, different clients. You start then as well imbuing in all this ecosystem the business element. So understanding the business, the margins and everything.
Earlier on, you made reference to DLT. What does that mean for our listeners?
Distributed ledger technology, digital ledger technology, what maybe the listeners would know as blockchain, which is predominantly a software artifact.
Can you explain what blockchain is?
Blockchain is, it's a novel system. It's a software which, to a certain extent, would allow, at least theoretically, a more decentralized way of doing business.
Okay.
It's peer-to-peer, where the individual user is more sovereign. It's as well the mother technology from which cryptocurrencies, digital assets, tokenization stem.
Earlier on, I asked you the question about how GTG legal influences the way startups and tech businesses are advised today. What would you say to that?
More than influences, I think we do accomplish what their business, legal and policy requirement requirements might preset. Usually a lot of businesses which set up in Malta seldomly do only business in Malta. Obviously, Malta is very small. Malta is strategically well positioned as well as a gateway to all Europe and even beyond. So even we approach all our clients with an international perspective. Some of them, you have diverse clients. You have diverse clients from different sectors. You have diverse clients as well, maturity-wise.
And when you say clients, locally based or foreign?
They would be. You could have clients locally based if it's a local bank, local telcos, local data center, local association. You can have clients which are foreign, who are establishing base in Malta to tap in the EU, financial services, EMIs, PSDs, crypto, and they can passport, telecoms, software as well. So you can have those form of clients. You can have startups as well. The audience might understand that as unicorns, the possible unicorns. So that is a different kind of animal altogether, and you need a different kind of predisposition, patience, and as well tackling of their exigencies. You need to be more patient there.
Okay. Maybe you can explain again what a unicorn is.
A unicorn is, so if you have the Revolut of this world, the Revolut of this world started as a software company. Initially, they required funding, so seed funding. Possibly, they started in UK. Government as well assisted them. They started developing their software. They are an offshoot of Monzo, which is another bank. Now you have Revolut, the Revolut of this world, which was a unicorn, which is predominantly a software company providing banking services. That is a unicorn, okay? Similarly, in Malta, we had unicorns. A lot of gaming companies, which are right now are listed, started as garage operations in Malta, given that Malta tapped at a very early stage something which was not captured within a European dimension. A lot of them started opening up companies, doing research, developing their software, applying for gaming licensing, going into gaming business, listing, then possibly doing merger, getting bought. So the whole ecosystem stemmed from Malta. So they started from zero and evolved into something which right now is huge.
So for what you're saying, would you say that Malta is a great place for startups right now?
I would say that, why not? Yes. Not only startups, though. Malta has the right environment, the right ecosystem for business to flourish. So whether you're a startup, whether you want to do an IPO, you're already established, whether you already have an existing business, but you want to touch on a new vertical, okay, because you might have new verticals, whether you want to expand, and this is still a little bit untapped, into R&D to add to your value, portfolio, and IPR. I think Malta offers the perfect, the most idyllic, it's not because we are Maltese, but the most idyllic environment.
And when you say that, what does that mean? We have the people, we have the resources, we have the talent. What are you referring to?
I specifically mentioned environment. So when you have an environment, it's, I think, a mixture of everything. So you have the right laws, you have the right predisposition, you have the right environment as well with the right skill set in particular areas. In other areas, I mean, we have to be honest, similar to other countries in Europe. We're struggling because technology is moving at a very fast pace. We have the right as well corporate and fiscal background. We have the right regulators and policy people who understands the need to make sure that the value is transmuted from one phase to another. That is extremely important as well. You have an environment as well where, contrary to other places in Europe, even though we're part of Europe and you can tap all the European continent from Malta because we have the same legislation, we have the same regulations, but ultimately here it is very much business friendly. Pro-business friendly, so you can meet regulators, you can meet as well industry specialists, and it's relatively easy. It is something which, when we work with other with the same clients abroad, that is a little bit, it's a little bit more difficult abroad. Let's not say impossible, but it's a little bit more difficult abroad.
Yeah, and when we are dealing with different jurisdictions, especially countries that are not part of the EU and where the legislation is different, how does one handle such a situation?
Yeah, predominantly in the EU, to a certain extent, it's facilitated. Even though we have the same legislative system, the procedures might be different. As I said before, even when you're trying to talk to a regulator, when you're trying to approach industry specialists, specialists might be a little bit different, but it's more close to home. You might find third countries who are pretty much actually advanced. For example, UK is a third country for Europe. However, the system is very much pro-business, and they understand as well the Maltese, how we work, how we function, and we take a lot as well, particularly in financial services as well, corporate from the UK model. But in other countries, usually what we do is we structure how things should be, more than the legal, how things should be, how they should plan their interaction and their interface with the regulators, with the industry specialists, and we make sure as well that they choose. This is very typical as well for European countries and countries which are not Malta. We always make it a point that they choose the best people on the ground so that they can be part of the team and we can make sure that ultimately the client is served in the best possible manner. Third countries, it is a little bit more difficult, particularly if you have no experience, but we try to assist the client in choosing the right people on the ground. That is of utmost importance.
What would you say is the biggest hurdle a new founder faces here in Malta?
It depends. If it's a startup, usually, so it's a startup, new business, they would require funding. You'd need to calibrate, you'd need to make sure that they have the right entrepreneurial maturity as well, because it is their first business, okay? You would need to make sure as well that irrespective of that, that their business, their product, their service is scalable, that Malta really fits their model. So that's a startup. Mature business usually, they need to understand, particularly if they're going to venture into highly regulated areas, that there's a different dynamic. There you need to invest in regulation. You'd need to invest and to a certain extent anticipate as well as part of your business plan certain risks. So irrespective of you having the money, you need to plan for that regulated area. Then you might have as well founders who want to either merge or want to buy out or they want to sell part of the share. So there you have a constellation of different risks. It depends on the exigencies of the client. You can't have a one-size-fits-all here.
So in a startup, it begins, should they call on a law firm day one or later?
Can I be honest, more than a law firm, I think they should approach the business with the right mindset. If they approach the business with the right mindset will predispose that if they see that they require regulatory, legal input, and they don't have internal capacity to provide it, the right mindset would predispose that they speak to the right people. So I would say that more than it is the right mindset which would predispose the correct moment in time at which you speak to a law firm or use a law firm.
Okay. Are there certain industries in Malta that are buzzing with opportunity?
Right now, yes. There was gaming for sure, and gaming is a very large chunk, even GDP-wise. So I'm going to focus on the technological front. Obviously, I'm not going to speak about tourism, which is another area, construction. That's a little bit out of my comfort zone. But on the technological front, gaming and gaming, there's a cluster, there's an ecosystem and a cluster of services. So not only the provision of gambling services, software, support, legal, accounts, I mean, tax, particularly if you have companies in Malta providing as well services abroad with multiple licenses. So gaming per se, I think it's still buzzing. It's not reminiscent of what we had 17, 18 years ago, but it's still buzzing. I mean, the concept of value has changed, but value is still there. They have financial services right now, fintech. So EMIs, PSDs, I think we have a very healthy ecosystem. We had the foresight to tap into this area at a very early stage, very early. Hands on heart, we have an extremely competent regulator, a regulator who is stern, harsh, but at the end of the day can understand business. And I think that is the differentiation when you have the same legislation, you might have the same people, we're small, for an operator to choose Malta as opposed to other countries. So we're going back to, we're circling back around the ecosystem.
Okay. What would you say is the number one legal mistake you see startups make in your experience?
My experience, a legal mistake would predispose that they left a legal avenue out. Let me give you a concrete example. Mm-hmm. You might have an Asian company, very well structured. They might have 1,800 people, 2,000 people in Asia, everywhere in the world, but it is their first attempt in Europe. So they have their own HR, their own internal legal, but Europe-wise, no. And they start constructing the employment avenues, the employment contracts, based on what they have, for example, in Asia. If they do that and they don't look at European legislation, they're, I mean, usually 95% of the cases, I mean, but it's all a question of mindset as well. Because, yes. I mean, obviously, if you have, I mean, with the right mindset, you're meant to anticipate that you're venturing into a new territory. Usually, you do a gap analysis, you check where the risks are, what you need to do, you plan. So it's very seldomly done if you're a very serious company. But we had occasions where particular employment, certain outfits would not think about that particular angle a priori.
So you're saying as well that the culture plays a very important part. It's a factor. I mean, the reality is, you know, the culture in Malta is not the same as the culture in Germany, for example, or in Austria. So wouldn't that be also an important element, even though here we're talking about the importance of employment law in Europe? Would that be a case?
Yes, it is culture for sure. Predominantly more for third countries rather than Europe. But more than culture, for example, here in Europe, European laws are quite robust. The employee has particular rights. In Asia, it's not that they don't have those rights, but the employer has more latitude. And when the employer has already multiple business set abroad for them, it's a natural extension. But when they touch Europe, and it's not only Malta, it's everywhere in Europe, European laws are harmonized as well. Some of them are a little bit choked.
Okay. You know, when you think of the importance of harmonization and compliance, there's so much paperwork
yep.
that it is very easy to get lost in this and forgetting the idea that you originally started
yep.
off with. How can founders protect their ideas as opposed to getting lost in all the paperwork that is required?
Well, this is a tricky question because usually the most important thing is before venturing into IPRs, having NDAs, registering their ideas, making sure that if they can fit within a patent or within copyright, figurative marks. I mean, that's a regime which applies pretty much everywhere, not only in Europe. But I go back to the mindset. So if you have an idea and that idea is developed in-house, usually you have the software developers, you have, if you're not self-developers, you have particular labs, you have specific funds for R&D, they develop, there's the idea there, you capitalize on that idea even accountancy-wise, IFRSs and all the rest. The important thing is that you value the capital, you value the idea, you value the extent of that particular knowledge within the company, then ultimately how you protect it, whether you protect it or whether, for example, you go for open licensing and all the rest. It depends on the business case. But okay. You need a culture internally, and that culture usually is something which we're seeing now. I think companies are becoming extremely more sophisticated, particularly on the IPR front. Usually ideas are protected through intellectual property laws.
Can you give an example where legal advice literally saved a business?
Let me give you a practical example which happened. So you might have a company, they were a startup, they started growing, they had either a good service offering or a good product, they were hardworking, automatically the company starts increasing in its value, so the share value increases as well. Their portfolio starts growing and they start becoming very attractive for larger companies, larger operators. Sometimes if they don't have the right mindset as well, they are lured into a trap. In these instances, a lawyer, somebody who is outside of all this intricate circle, would give them a very open and realistic view of what's exactly happening on the table. We've saved several businesses on that front.
Okay. So how do you help startups innovate fast but stay on the right side of the law?
Usually more than helping them is we try to understand them. Because remember that the business is theirs, not ours. We are not the business people here. So we try to help them. We try to make sure that we understand their needs. We try to make sure that everything is crystal clear for them with regards to potentially risks and exposure. Then those risks and exposure, they would need to assess how that will affect their bottom line, their business plan, that is their remit, startups. If we have licensed companies, our remit is goes a little bit further more than that, because we would need to literally see how that affects the business plan, because we see the business plan as well, we see their contingency plans, and do make sure that what is presented for regulatory scoping, for licensing, meets our internal requirements. So even there, you might have a startup as well going for a license. So there are different angles, there are different parameters depending on more than the startup, the activity, whether it's regulated or not, whether you're going to apply for a license, it depends on the activity.
What would you say is the key to growing a multi-startup internationally?
The key is the last, putting emphasis on the last word you mentioned, internationally. You need to have an international mindset, a priori.
And how does GTG Legal help founders structure their company for investors?
Structuring the company for investors is a little bit different, because structuring the company, then it's planning the ins, the out, the exit strategy of the company, at which stages in time they're seeing increase in value and how they are going to imbue that increase in value, whether to shareholders loan, you need to make sure that the business is still there, that's not substantiated through shareholders loan, crowdfunding, IPOs. So that is part of the journey, whether they're planning to do an exit, either merge, either sell out. So there you'd need to see the feasibility of the portfolio, and you'd need to match that with existing market parameters, because otherwise it's pie in the sky. So it depends on the business case. Sometimes it is out of our comfort zone. We do know our area as much as other law firms know other areas, but it's more because we venture, you have experience. It's not because you're qualified or you have specific knowledge. And there we ask them to rope in specific experts in the field so that they can make sure that everything is sustainable.
You made reference to IPO. What does that mean?
IPO, it's prospectus. So usually it's a capital markets or crowdfunding. There's a particular ceiling. You can seek funding through the public or through professional investors. IPO is the same thing. You list a company. You can list it locally. You can list it abroad as well. You can as well increase value through either getting new shareholders in. So they either increase the shareholding they buy, or else you sell the shareholding and get new shareholders, money and new shareholders, new blood, or amalgamation of companies. You might have two companies, separate companies, and they join forces. They are amalgamated. They become a larger force. It depends on what the client intends to do, ideally at stage one, because the more you know on stage one, the more they let you strategize with them, the more you can prepare the terrain for them for what's to come.
In your role when you're advising these companies, do you make suggestions for improvement, or would you just listen to what the company would like to do and you will obviously give the advice necessary?
It depends on the client. If the client wants the lawyer, and the only thing he's asking, and he's extremely fiscal, is a legal brief, that is where we stop. If sometimes more than the legal brief, you know the client, you've literally started decrying the client baby steps and you've known the client for the past years, okay? You know their business case, there you might, sometimes we do remove our lawyer's cap and speak extremely candidly. It's not a legal advice. Speak extremely candidly with the client, or else inquire further on certain parameters which might not be clear to us, but it depends on the client ultimately.
Okay. Here, now we will take a short musical break. Please stay tuned to Campus 103.7 to continue listening to the discussion on how GTG Legal support businesses and startups to grow, innovate and succeed. Before we go, the following song,
Il Mondo di Jimmy Fontana,
was selected. Ian, why did you choose it?
It's a beautiful song, and it's an Italian song, even because of the message. Aside from the fact that it speaks about the word, but it also touches on elements of humility and the fact that ultimately whatever you do, whatever happens, like time is relentless, even the world is relentless. Il mondo gira, gira, as the Italians say.
No, stanotte amore non ho più pensato a te. Ho aperto gli occhi per guardare intorno a me. E intorno a me girava il mondo come sempre. Gira il mondo, gira nello spazio senza fine. Con gli amori appena nati, con gli amori già finiti, con la gioia e col dolore della gente come me. Un mondo, soltanto adesso io ti guardo, nel tuo silenzio io mi perdo e sono niente accanto a te.
Welcome back to Business Frontiers in Malta with me, Anne-Marie Take. Now let us get into the second part of the discussion. With me, I have Dr. Ian Gauci from GTG Legal, and we are discussing how GTG Legal support businesses and startups to grow, innovate, and succeed. Ian, before the break, we were talking about startups approaching investors. What is the biggest mistake founders make when talking to investors?
It depends. Usually, when you have seasoned businesses and startups, before they speak to the investors, they would know exactly the kind of investors, why they're speaking to them. They would do and usually help them out as well at Tara KYC on them, was irrespective of what the papers, what the market say. They need to know as well the people behind the business, okay? And ultimately, when you're approaching an investor, you'd need to know exactly why. It's not like you're approaching an investor and you don't know whether you're going to sell out, whether you're going to sell 20%, whether you want to have a strategic investor, so not part of the shareholding, whether you don't know if a very good offer comes in, you're ready to forsake majority shareholding. So usually you'd need to plan everything before you start approaching investors. It's not that I want money, you just go out there. It needs to be much more sophisticated.
Would you say that even for a tiny startup, does corporate governance really matter?
Yeah, corporate governance is extremely important. Any form of governance is extremely important. It's the heart and soul of a company. Even as they develop, then governance becomes more sophisticated through the internal governance processes. You can imbue as well regulatory parameters, legal parameters. So governance is the heart and soul of every company.
Okay. How can founders stay innovative while still following the rules?
I would turn this on top of its head. Recently, particularly in Europe, you need to focus on the rules and start thinking about innovation after you see the rules, regrettably, because Europe is heavily regulated, whether from the data protection, investor point of view, consumer point of view, whether you're going to touch any element which would attract financial services legislation, AI is regulated as well. So there is cybersecurity, operational resilience. So look very closely at what the European legislative regulatory capture is. It's very important as well that they realize that it's not what you do in Europe, but what you do from Europe, usually, because the European legislation has what it's called the Brussels effect. So as long as you're established in Europe, even though you're providing certain services in Mexico, in Canada, I mean, the full gamut of certain European legislation still applies. So they need to be quite wary of that. But once you realize, once you see, and once you can meter the extent of why there is regulation, that can be a service differential. Now, the trick is how to imbue that within your perceived margins in your business claim, in your business case. But ultimately, you need to weaponize that. It needs to be an enabler, a stealth. So it's regulation by design as opposed to other countries which, or other products in different countries which might not have that particular stealth. But let's be honest, ultimately, it's the margin which counts because every business runs on margin. So that becomes a little bit tricky.
Okay. Earlier on, you were talking about the startup scene. What trends are you excited about in Malta's scenario?
We're seeing a lot of young people in Malta with very fresh ideas, with innovative ideas as well, with the potential to scale. That excites me. It does excite me. It has two different sides of the coin. Usually these young people have extremely good idea, but they don't have the right entrepreneurial acumen. But we're seeing as well that in the local ecosystem, and there is a particular cohort here where we are tapping into these startups, think there is the right environment. So if you require specific legal advice, which is as well well-metered, even cost-wise, you can take it, entrepreneurial advice. If you require as well specific skill set from the regulatory body, so that we've established as well multiple sandboxes. So I'm excited on that front, because if we are lucky and we're investing heavily, I think we will see the results locally.
Okay. Just to understand a little bit about the organization that you head, GTG Legal.
Yep.
How many people work with your organization?
Right now I have an outfit of, I think, approximately 25 people.
Okay.
Quite solid. We have lawyers, we have accountants, we have economists. So quite solid. I regrettably, I'm one of the oldest. So a very young organization, buzzing and dynamic. I had people I used to teach at university, and we practically service all industries. I think the only thing which we don't actively do is criminal work. It's not something which we do.
So you offer different services,
yes.
Different legal services?
Yes, different legal services.
And would you say that many of your staff have been trained in different areas?
We have staff who have been trained with either respective master's, accreditation. We make it a point that even the younger ones take the available courses at hand. We promote a lot as well, travel. So we are international for us. We do participate. We try to promote as well, similar to what I've done, that they keep as well involved in academia, because it gives them the right backing, it gives them the right context, and it installs in them the right discipline as well. I think it's extremely important. I think it augurs well, because I'm seeing that we have the right mix. Let's put it that way.
Okay. And in terms of gender?
Gender, we're quite mixed. We have females and males, both of them.
Right.
And we have married lawyers. We have young lawyers who are not married as yet, married with kids. It's I think a very nice mix. And what gratifies me is that it's not only having a team on paper; they help each other. Certain yes. principles, certain parameters are set by us, but otherwise we give them the flexibility, and they make sure that as a team effort, they help each other.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that it's a young organization.
Yep.
Do you know what the average age in your organization is?
So I'm going to be 51. The other partner is, I think, 52. Then the others are 40 and under 40.
Okay. You were mentioning here that this younger workforce, many of them will probably be Gen Zs.
I think we have even trainees coming in, so fourth-year lawyers who have just graduated last year.
So they have a different ways of working, of expectations, etc. How does your organization, as the core team, handle such different generations?
That's a very tricky question. I have to be honest and candid. Throughout the years, even whilst managing the business, it's not that everything has been extremely rosy. You'll find people who don't fit. You'll find people who might be exceptional. But character-wise, maybe value-wise within the company, they don't fit the particular ethos, the particular portfolio we have. Ultimately, we're realizing that as we evolve, the right people are finding the right places within our company, because we're keeping steadfast to our ethos. So we are very disciplined in what we do. We take pride in what we do. It's like a marriage. Ultimately, nothing is perfect. When there's hard work, I mean, Saturdays, Sundays, holidays, we cancel holidays. If you're abroad, laptop, everybody hands on deck. We help each other. When there's fun, everybody enjoys it. But when there's either a lot of blood, we say, or we're crying because we have problems at work because of certain deadlines, certain parameters, multiple requests from multiple clients, they're all hands on deck to help each other. So as long as everybody understands that is our ethos, okay, and understands as well that we venture into areas, we're not very big, we're quite petite, okay, and we're quite focused and specialized. So you might have different ideas. We try to listen to everybody, but ultimately the final buck rests on me. So on me and on the other director. So we need to decide strategically where we want to take the company. And our strength has always been tech. So you might have citizenship, you might have other areas. Yes, we might do, but our focus has always been that. And I think that made sure that from the value, as a value enabler, GTG is a little bit different than other outfits. So it is part of our pedigree. So whoever comes in, it's not only the ethos then, needs to understand that that is our pedigree. If you partake in all that, you will bring value, we will give you value, you will be part of a larger value chain going forward. That is the secret. It's not easy, definitely not easy, because even the younger generation, regrettably, are a little bit more fickle. They are still extremely hardworking. I have met very capable people, extremely capable people. You need a different mindset. Sometimes you need to be more flexible with them. You need to give them time. You need to be more patient. They require mentorship more than the previous one. And as much as possible, we try to mentor them, not only at work, but even, for example, if they are going to get married, if they have kids, listen, work-life balance, yes, work from there, we're a team, distribute the work as long as it is done. Everything is important because ultimately we know that unless you do that, something will break. It's nice. I won't say it's a family because a business is a business, but we do share the traits of a family.
Maybe you can afford to say something like this because you are a small company in the sense of 25 people is manageable, is doable. But as you grow, most likely you'd have to have much more of a structured approach, much more SOPs, you know.
We do have SOPs. We are structured, extremely structured, billing-wise, time-wise, everything, every unit counts. As a matter of fact, one of the partners is in the CSP business is an ex-KPMG guy. So he brings in the fiscal part, every unit counts. Yes, that is extreme. Even billing, 20 days, everything extremely structures, even SOPs, KPIs, and we don't have static KPIs, so even those are variables. But more than that, ultimately, irrespective of that, we advise companies, big companies who have that. I think we're strong at the core. The core is an important thing.
Okay. Where is GTG physically in Malta?
In Valletta.
In Valletta. Okay, let's move on now to the importance of innovation and networking. How would you connect startups with mentors, investors, or partners abroad?
That is something which I shy away from. So usually what we do is similar to if they require particular expertise on the ground. We'll just recommend 2-3 outfits, but it's very seldom that we tell them, listen, go work with this, or we would suggest you use this particular guy or this particular company, because we give legal advice.
But when you say you give legal advice to people who are Maltese in the country?
Well, we give legal advice in general. So legal advice, if it's not legal advice, it's corporate and regulatory advice. We don't give business advice. Then if it's a client we've known, they grew with us, he trusts us. Sometimes I will tell me, listen, but give me your honest view. I tell him, listen, yes, I worked with this and this. We worked with them. From every interface we had with them, we've seen a very professional outlook, price-wise and everything, I think. But suss them out. It's not my responsibility.
Yes. Okay. Would you say there are legal traps in Malta that foreign founders often miss?
If you buy property, you need to know the mechanics of buying a property. If you employ people, if you're venturing and dealing with multiple authorities, if you're going to get regulated, if you're trying to apply for residency, more than legal traps, there are specific technicalities, specific policies and procedures, which might be different from the countries from which our client would originate, and might be showstoppers more than traps.
What does that mean?
Showstoppers to the extent that you're planning to, for example, start a business in 3 months, you did not anticipate certain procedures, policies, which you had to adhere to, and that might prolong the process to 6-7 months.
So you're saying that this is what founders should do if things go wrong?
No, I'm saying, as I will go back to my initial comments, the mindset is the most important thing. Usually when you do something, you plan. When you plan, you need to create a forecast, so you create a forecast based on knowledge.
Yes, but you would seek advice, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I just seek advice. But even if you have good people on the ground nowadays online, with even the authorities, they have public authorities here in Malta. It's a European thing, but in Malta, we've always had authorities who publish a lot of information. They are extremely helpful. So even if you have your right people with the right aptitude, 80% of the information, you'll find it. Then you'll bring in lawyers who might clarify and fill in the gaps. But a lot of the material is readily available and is online, God willing, and is updated regularly.
So let's go back a little bit to yourself, Ian, yourself. You said that you lecture at university. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
I used to lecture, Digital Futures. So it was DLT, Telcos, and Innovative Technology Law. And I used to lecture as well. There was a master's in blockchain entrepreneurship and coding. It's three cohorts as a master's course. We had created that when we created the first blockchain laws in Europe.
Okay. And do you still lecture?
No,
you don't do that
sometimes
anymore.
Sometimes I assist, either supervising, but unless I can dedicate a substantial amount of time towards university. And right now I'm a little bit overwhelmed, to be honest.
Okay. And also, originally in your bio notes, you had mentioned something about authorship.
Yep.
Would you tell us a little bit more about that?
I do. I do contribute even academic papers, even with other university professors. Sometimes I write articles as well. So predominantly, I'm very active, even Oxford blogs and all the rest on the technological front. So AI, IPR. And digital assets. So that would be cryptocurrencies, securities, digitalized securities, and all the rest. But occasionally, I would say to professors as well, I venture into philosophy, so philosophical articles. I like to keep myself busy, and it gives me a different perspective as well, even when approaching diverse topics. I think it gives you a more holistic view on the dimension of the topics at hand.
So you are a lawyer, but by profession?
Academically, I'm trained as a lawyer.
Yes.
So even my degree.
Okay. What is the single best piece of advice you would give every Maltese startup, founder or company?
I would say one word, be realistic.
Can we expand on that?
Yeah, be realistic to the extent. Everybody would love to have grandeur. Everybody would love to be rich yesterday, not today, let alone tomorrow. But ultimately, you need to be cognizant of what you have at hand. So you need to establish your ground zero, okay? What that ground zero is going to give you, what you need to do to go beyond that ground zero, at what cost, and what is going to be, as I said, before your exit. So be realistic. Be realistic. Aspire, yes, but be realistic. We're not living in a land of dreams. Because people who live in a land of dreams, when they're doing business, unless they can, to a certain extent, plan around their dream, around that vision, usually are up for some painful trajectories.
Yes, but don't you say that failure is part of the game?
Yes, but if you can avoid it, why not avoid it? Failure is part, failure to a certain, if you've done your best and everything, the simple fact that you've done your best, you planned and you faltered, that makes you stronger. But you've approached it with the right mental attitude, with the right mindset, with the right discipline. So there you can only go stronger if you have stamina. But if the mindset was not there, if you were very frivolous in what you were doing, if everybody accepted just a concept because you're Mr. X, so whatever you say is manna from heaven, I think you can do it 100 times there. You're going to fail if you keep on with the same mindset. And if you don't make amends to the previous processes, which practically stultified all your business plan or all your endeavors, you're going to fail over again because the mindset is always wrong. So it's not more than failure. You need to have the right mindset.
Can you teach the right mindset?
I would be obtuse if I had to teach the right mindset. I think What I can share is discipline. Because the right mindset is different. If you have a flamboyant businessman, but he is more open to risk, but he has a very clear vision, he's planning, he's ready as well to structure the journey has a particular mindset, it's disciplined, it's a little bit more adventurous. So even there, I can't teach. I think the most important thing is the discipline. And ultimately that you know that you're going to take the responsibility for it. And it has a bearing on your family if you're employing people and they rely on you and their families, okay, more than ego. So ultimately it has a bearing. So you have a responsibility as well.
Right. Okay. How do you see law firms like GTG supporting Malta's startup ecosystem in the next 5 to 10 years?
I would say that the law firms will, they are already part of the existing ecosystem because there are other company, other outfits, other individuals supporting and nurturing the local ecosystem. And as law firms, we play a small part. I think that part is going to be incremented. Because as I said before, the European landscape is heavily laden with regulation, with laws, okay? I think we're understanding as well sometimes that law firms need to differentiate in how you approach, how to charge, how to as well mentor, how to structure these startups. Ultimately, they can be, one of them can be the future unicorn of this world. And if you started that business, I mean, then even your value chain will grow with the client and it's a personal satisfaction as well. So I'm seeing that law firms are getting more predisposed to towards this particular environment. But I see no reason why this particular environment should not be bolstered further as the years go along. I think Malta has the right terroir here.
You know, we talk a lot about artificial intelligence. Does this in any way have an effect or a bearing on the services you give as GTG?
Well, inadvertently, yes. I mean, AI, we advise a lot on AI. So I happen to advise the Malta Digital Innovation Authority. I was heavily involved on the AI front before the AI Act came in, advising as well on implementing it. So there I was heavily involved. But AI is affecting all spheres or sectors of our economy. So whether it's legal, whether it's education, whether it's medical, I mean, yes, it will. It will. It's literally a foundational piece of tech. It's re-transforming the majority of sectors we've been servicing. So there could be sectors which will cease to exist. We might as well, and we're anticipating to see new sectors which AI will bring along.
Do you have an example of this?
Well, yes, there are examples. As a matter of fact, for example, certain particular services within the financial services industry, AI can make sure that within particular parameters, they can outperform certain humans. So we're seeing that there could be services which humans could not provide or the existing infrastructure could not provide. Medicine, a lot of that activity as well. Compliance, what AI can do, I mean, is very difficult for humans to replicate. So as long as the human is involved and AI is used as a tool and the human understands the value trajectory of AI, okay, input, output, and how it recalibrates everything to create and to give the value. I would say that I don't have a crystal ball, but a lot of the stuff which we are doing right now might, let's not say be obsolete, but I think it will be transmuted into something which is conceptually different.
Okay. I have one last question for you, Ian. Do you have any advice for students who may wish to become future entrepreneurs?
Yes. Think like an entrepreneur. Think. I mean, a lot of the students have to think like an entrepreneur, even if they have their salary, they go to work. So you'd need to practically manage your expectation, your budgets and everything. So you need to think like an entrepreneur. Okay. You need to, when you think like an entrepreneur, then from thinking, you go to action. Act like an entrepreneur as well. Usually they join all these social committees, some form of little businesses as well. And I mean, there's a lot of room where they can expand locally. Some things which we did not have way back in our days. Once they have that mindset, then even when they're approaching whatever they do in life, so whether you're taking medicine course, legal course and whatsoever, approach it with an entrepreneurial mindset. Whatever you do. But I think it's embedding the right mindset a priori, and then you build up on that.
Well, this is all the time we have for today's program. I wish to thank our guest, Dr. Ian Gauci from GTG Legal for taking time out to accept our invitation. I would also like to thank Mark Arjus for the technical assistance of this program. Thank you so much for tuning in to Business Frontiers in Malta. I am Anne Marie Teague from the University of Malta, and it's been a pleasure spending this time with you.